This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard Hall here from Stonehenge, Aotearoa, and this is the night sky. This is coming up there. And with me, of course, as always, is Kay.
Hello everybody.
And also, apparently he's supposed to be with us, but I can't see him at the moment, is Keith. So let's hope he's all okay. Anyway, folks, we'll get on with our night sky program. I always forget this bit. I always like to thank Dan Broughton from Wairarapa Web Design for sponsoring this program. Okay, thanks, Dan. Okay, so looking at Stonehenge itself. I know the weather's pretty crappy at the moment down here, but at the moment we're open from Wednesday to Sunday from 10 o'clock to 4 p.m. And you can come out there anywhere in that time and do a self-guided tour. Also available, of course, are guided tours when you get somebody like me take you backwards in time, as it were, to discover all the ancient knowledge of our ancestors and so on. So they're the guided tours. And also the other thing we do is Star Treks. Only thing we can never guarantee, of course, is the weather.
Yeah. But for guided tours and Star Treks, you do need to book in ahead of time.
Oh, okay? Yes. Yeah.
There's only two of us, so if you don't book in and turn up wanting a guided tour, there's a very strong chance that you can't have one.
That's right, yeah. So you have to book ahead. And I said, the one thing we can never guarantee is the sky. So that's a bit of a risk, yeah. And also, if you are particularly wanting to see the stars, please don't do what a lot of people do, is decide to book it on a night when there's a full moon.
Yes, because it's a big searchlight in the sky.
And it blasts out and you lose all the fainter stars and the structure of the Milky Way and so on.
And certainly in the area that the moon is in. It's first quarter and last quarter. So just coming away from a new moon or just heading towards the new moon where it's black.
Yeah, that's right.
Shows on your calendars as a black circle. Yeah, yeah. So a little bit either side of that is optimum.
Yep. Okay, and but also it's very special coming up at the moment. We've got the winter solstice, our winter solstice, and we always put a special program on. This is Tales of the Winter Solstice. And I tell you what, when people come out, they become absolutely amazed at a lot of the great festivals that they have in religions and so on are all related to things like the solstices and the equinoxes. So what we do is take you on a journey back into the past where these grand traditions actually started from. And it's actually a fascinating story because it's a story of humankind, isn't it, Kay?
It is. Now, some people wonder why it's so early. You know, our solstices and equinoxes end up at different times. We are coming to the shortest day of the year, and so therefore our functions are based around the sunset. So I'm afraid the sunset's early, as you've all noticed when you go to work and come home again. So in order to involve that, we have to start early.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And a lot of people call it a midwinter's day and so on. Well, actually it's not, if you want to talk about winter. It may be the shortest day of the year, but it actually marks the beginning of the cold period. So it's normally the months coming, it's directly after the winter solstice, which are really cold.
Yeah, because you're still, as we all know, a little bit of warmth is left behind at the moment.
That's right, yeah.
We have the odd warm day, which feels quite good. Sometimes the air is cold, but the sun is out and it's not too bad. But after that, doesn't really feel like the days are opening up for a while because you quite often get bad weather. And the bad weather makes you think that it's the day's not getting any longer.
That's right.
It is, but it doesn't feel like it.
No. Of course, as you move away from a solstice, the changes in the day gradually, rapidly begin to become noticeable. Right? And that's simply because of the rapid change of the setting position of the sun in the sky. Because we always say the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Yes, it does that on 2 days of the year, the two equinoxes. right?
Mm, and the name solstice basically means the sun standing still.
That's right, yeah.
So if you were watching it going along the horizon, it's going slower as it comes towards the solstice and then looks almost as if it stopped. It hasn't quite, but it looks as if it has. It
turns around and goes back again.
And then it goes back again. Yeah. Equinox is the opposite. It's going real fast.
Anyway, that's the tales of the winter solstice. And so we're going to be learning out all these great tales, particularly things like Christmas and things like that, which you might think were a Christian festival. But in fact, people have been celebrating Christmas long before the coming of Christianity. We're going to be looking at all of these grand tales and so on. And that's going to start at 4 o'clock on Sunday, June the 21st. At Stonehenge, and hopefully, if the sky is clear, we'll be able to go out and see the sun set on the winter solstice stone. All right, but you, as Kay is saying, you do need to book for that. Okay,
that's right.
Okay, so that's the winter solstice we got coming up, and then of course, shortly after that, in July on the 10th, we've got the legends of Matariki. All right, and I'm actually surprised that for most people in New Zealand. Matariki, they know all about it, right? And they know of the Matariki and so on. And it's just seen as a purely Maori thing. When people come out to see the legends of Matariki, you'll discover, in fact, Matariki was celebrated right the way around the world.
Yeah.
Anyway, and we're going to be looking at all these ancient traditions again.
I might not have called it Matariki, of course, that's all.
No, no. Mm. Anyway, yes, anyway, that's going to start at 4:30 p.m. on Friday, July the 10th at Stonehenge, Aotearoa. Now, I should point out to you, we're not going to be able to take you out and show you Matariki because it's in our dawn sky.
If something is in the dawn sky, it's 6 months later that you see it in the evening sky.
That's right, yeah. Anyway, well, a lot of things we'll be able to see anyway. Okay, so that's the solstice and also the legends of Matariki coming up. If you want any further information, just give us a call, okay? All right, and as the sun goes down, you can't help but notice it when we've had a clear night. There appears to be a cluster of really bright star-like objects. The brightest one is the planet Venus, and following behind that is the planet Jupiter. And, of course, what we're looking at here are planets. And the word planet means wandering star because to our ancestors, that they were simply big, bright stars that wandered around. Yeah.
Well, some people today don't realise that.
No.
Yeah, they stay in their orbit.
Yeah.
It's just like racing cars on a circuit, you know, they can appear to go past each other.
Yeah, and of course Venus, because it's closer to the sun than the Earth, we only ever see it in the evening sky or in the dawn sky. We never see it, you know, at midnight or something like that. And once upon a time, people used to think the evening star and the morning star
two different objects.
They're both a planet Venus, right? You can see out there at the moment. So that's brilliant Venus, right? We can see. So let's have a close-up look. And when you see Venus in the sky, it looks like an awesome object. And then you get your telescope out and you have a look through your telescope. And it's probably the most disappointing object to look at, isn't it, Kate? Because in most cases, you can't see any detail whatsoever. Right?
There are a few people who can. It's like everything else, you know, there are a few people who can hear beyond the normal range. There are a few people who can see beyond the normal visual range. And they can see little shadows. You can see that are caused by clouds, you know, the cloud pattern. And other people can't see them at all.
Mm.
And it's always been like that. There have always been people who can see beyond the normal range or hear beyond the normal range.
Well, unlike looking at Jupiter, which you all know, also can only see the cloud tops, Venus, even in exposure photographs, so people watching this on TV can see a photograph of Venus now showing a little bit of a phase there. And, of course, that's what planets closer to the sun show, just like the moon. We see them in different phases. But you can just see some markings of the cloud. But that's all we can see. And because of that, it's been a complete mystery to what was down there on the surface.
And there's nothing like a mystery because people like to fill it up with stories and imagination.
Okay, so when we're trying to work out, well, what is actually beneath those clouds? What are we likely to see? Because when you look at Venus and you measure it up, it's virtually the same size as the Earth. It's just closer to the Sun. Now, if we go back before the discovery and knowledge of nuclear energy, right, and that's actually not too far. If you go back a century in time, right, people were doing nothing about nuclear energy, right? And people, scientists try to work out, well, where does the energy of the Sun come from, and in turn, other stars? And the theory proposed, which tended to be adopted by most people, it was gravity. So what you had was a big ball of a mass that has formed, and gravity compresses it together. And as you know, if something gets compressed, it releases heat energy. So it was believed the light that we see from the Sun is coming from gravitational contraction.
Well, the reasoning's quite sound.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. And that is true of something. Well, it's certainly true of a lot of the planets which still are contracting.
Yeah, that's right. But you see, there was no other explanation, no other scientific thing that could explain where the energy of the Sun and indeed other stars came from. So that's what they thought it was gravity. Well, so therefore, if gravity was the main cause of things, what does it mean that as time goes on, the science would tell us that the Sun is actually gradually cooling?
It should cool, under that scenario.
In other words, the Sun was hotter in the past.
And it's gradually becoming less.
And in turn, that would alter the environments of the planets, right? And the planets, of course, people were mostly interested in was Venus and Mars, which are both quite close to the Earth, but which seem to be the possibility, because they're rocky worlds with atmospheres, could also sustain life. Now, this meant that under this theory, if life evolves on these planets, the first place it would have started to evolve would be the planet Mars, right? Because in the earlier stages, Earth and Venus were too hot, right? And then as time goes on, life then develops on the Earth and then later on Venus. And so the belief was that if we could actually get to these other planets, we would find life there, but it would be judged by time, all right? So in other words, if we're looking at Mars, its environment would be older than ours. Therefore, the most likely thing is that it would have life, and, of course, what could exist on there?
Could be more advanced.
Martians. And that is why, if you look back into the 19th century and so on, Mars is the place where aliens come from.
Yeah.
War of the Worlds.
The canals and all sorts of interesting
things.
That's right.
Mars. I remember that when I was a kid. I know I'm not quite that old, am I, Kay?
Sort of.
Yeah. But I can remember that Mars was the place where all sorts of weird and wonderful things. And, of course, with Mars also, remember the canals on Mars?
Yeah, Canelli.
Yeah, Canelli.
That was a mistranslation.
Yeah, this astronomer said he could see these things, Canelli.
Canelli. He did not mean canal, like we think of, like man-made streams.
And exactly, and what people came up with, these are canals. And that, and of course, even going back into the 19th century, that was a major form of transport. Water canals.
Yeah, straight lines. You think of Liverpool and in between, you know, before they had locomotives, that was what they used.
That's right, yeah.
And they even used it afterwards. It's just people holidaying on them now.
That's where I lived in Heston. It went to London and so on, you know.
Yeah, it's a major form of transport.
Yeah.
Man-made streams, in other words.
So therefore, if you can see canals on Mars, there must be Martians there and so on. Mm. Turns out, of course, there's no canals on Mars. But we can have a look at this in much greater detail later on there. Now, on the other hand, if Mars was more advanced than the Earth, Venus would be in a more primitive state. And so it was believed that if we could go beneath the clouds, and indeed, why there were all those clouds, it would be like going back to the Carboniferous period, back to the time when the world was covered in dense vegetation and so on, the Coal Age, right? And swamps. hey, and maybe even dinosaurs were there, right? And of course, because there's so many swamps on Venus and that sort of thing, and it was warmer than the Earth, that's why we couldn't see the surface, because it was covered in clouds. Yeah. So that's what we... And as I say, you go back a century or less than that, that's what you would see in encyclopedias, is that's what they thought was probably there. But I'm afraid we had the story completely wrong. All right. Well, they began after a while being able to search beneath the clouds, all right? And things like radar and do that. And indeed, they discovered it is a planet very similar to the Earth. You have rocky regions, you've got plains. A bit like looking at this picture here. If you imagine it in black and white, you're looking at the moon or something like that, the Maria being dark areas, which would be water and mountains and so on. So what they started to do with Venus was to send out probes to Venus and then send it, and these probes would then send a thing down to the surface of Venus, which is what they did. But what happened is, so they sent this probe down and suddenly it just stopped working. That's sort of strange. So they sent another one and exactly the same thing happened. Right? And something was going on here. So eventually they built another spacecraft which was really covered in armour, as it were. And it did manage to reach the surface. Right? And... it discovered the surface of Venus, unlike being a tropical world with creatures living on there, was the nearest thing to hell that you can imagine. All right? So let's have a look at it.
You have to bear in mind that none of those people saying that have actually been to hell, presumably.
Yeah, but your imagination, what hell is like. Okay, so let's have a look. As it descended down, and this is why this other spacecraft didn't suffice. When it got down, it measured the surface temperature as 475 degrees Celsius. Now, that is hot enough to melt tin and lead, right? So certainly living things couldn't exist. They'd just be incinerated, right? But that's not all it was. The other thing that discovered about the atmosphere... Hello. Surface temperature is 475 degrees centigrade. The atmosphere was carbon dioxide, and that's what where a lot of the temperature is coming from, because it's a greenhouse gas. But the yellow clouds that they could see were actually sulfuric acid, clouds of sulfuric acid. So it rained on Mars, on Venus, but not water. It rained sulfuric acid.
So you got squashed, frizzled, and dissolved.
That's right. And furthermore, the atmospheric pressure when they measured, and there's another reason why spacecraft did it, was 92 atmospheres.
That's 92 times Earth.
That pressure, yeah. Mm. So, yeah, imagine that. Imagine weighing 92 times your present weight. And anything going down there, that's why spacecraft, they just got crumpled under the atmospheric pressure. And the sulfuric acid would have eroded it away.
And they kind of boiled away as well.
So what was going on here? Why was Venus so different? Well, it's because we had our initial astronomy incorrect, right? The energy coming from the sun, we now know, and other stars, most of them anyway, is nuclear energy. So at the centre of the sun is a nuclear core turning hydrogen into helium. It's the same process used in the hydrogen bomb, but on a much grander scale. Right, and it releases this energy. But unlike the old theory, where we know where the sun was actually sort of cooling, the sun is actually brightening. Right, so it was fainter in the past, and it will be brighter in the future. So that's what it was telling us at the moment. And I just pulled up a graph for those of you watching this on TV, showing the numbers going up on that line are in billions of years.
You can see how they're getting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How the luminosity
increasing,
is the sun is increasing, over time. And this, of course, is now very, very accurate, this information I'm telling you now. And so knowing this information, we can now plot back and see what was happening. We do this on the Earth, and in turn we can see exactly the same thing.
This is separate from what we call global warming, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
This is something happening from the sun that would happen no matter how good we were at global warming. Global warming is something we're causing.
Yeah, solar warming. Okay, so what this meant was, if we look at today, Earth and Venus, as we know it, Venus is an inferno, Earth is a beautiful world covered in water and living creatures. Right? If we go backwards in time, right, 3.5 billion years ago, the Earth would have been a frozen planet because the sun would have been a lot fainter. And Venus, on the other hand, would have been a beautiful water world like the Earth, and possibly also living things there as well. But that was 3.5 billion years ago. Today, of course, as the sun has brightened, the Earth has become the place for life. Venus has become an inferno. The future, well, the same fate awaits the Earth, because slowly over time, the sun will brighten. Conditions will get hotter. Eventually the oceans will boil away and Earth will turn into an inferno. So with often people have said when they learnt this, oh, well, we do need to get to other stars. But we're talking about billions of years in the future at this stage.
Yeah, this is not an excuse for not dealing with global warming.
This, and in fact, a lot of people even try to do that. I just brought up global warming now. What scientists are worried about when we talk about global warming, us changing the atmosphere, is what we do is accelerate this process, a natural process. By putting with CO2 and other things into the atmosphere, it will begin to get warmer. So what a process with these new gases and pollutants we put in the atmosphere, something which would have taken a billion years to occur, can occur, you know, in hundreds of years and things like that.
Yeah, that's right. So we could accelerate the warming of the Earth to match what you're seeing there or what Venus is far quicker. In other words, you could make it pretty intolerable in our grandchildren's time.
And the scary thing about it, folks, is not one of those things where, hey, listen, we can actually show you global warming. Well, we'll change it all. It can become a runaway process, and this is what scientists are worried about.
You can't stop it.
If we don't stop it soon, we'll have a runaway process, and even if we start cutting off our stuff, it'd be too late. There's already too much stuff being pumped.
I know some of them are worried that some processes have already reached that point. Yeah. Or are very, very close to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not a matter of just being irritating to people. We talk, this is pure scientific fact, that what the differences we're making to the environment. Right? And at the moment, folks, we've only got one world, and that's this planet Earth.
And we're not meeting our targets.
No.
Because this isn't something you can say, oh, you know, the Netherlands are so good at it, they met their targets and exceeded them, so we'll be all right. No, it's a worldwide problem. So that's not going to make enough difference if everybody else is not doing it. And some are trying, some are doing quite well. I mean, China used to be behind the pack, it's ahead of the pack now. But places like America are dropping away. We're not doing too hot at the moment in New Zealand.
No, and so when you go out, and if it's clear tonight and you see that brilliant Venus in the sky, just remember once upon a time, that was almost certainly an Earth-like world with liquid water and possibly life there, abundant life as well. But it's now, as I mentioned, started off this program, it's the nearest thing to hell you can imagine. And that same fate awaits the Earth unless we critically do something about it now.
Yeah. We make the weather to suit ourselves.
That's right. So when we look at the planets, what to remember, whether we're looking at the Earth, Venus, Mars, Mercury or whatever, we're seeing them right now as a window in time. All of the planets, their environments were different in the past and will be different in the future because of this slow process of change in solar energy. And it's something you have to take into account. If you want to know what was happening on the Earth in the days of the dinosaurs, for example, you've got to remember that the sun would have been slightly warmer at that stage and so on. Yeah. So everything is this. When we look out, we see things in a window in time. The other bright star up there, of course, is the planet Jupiter. And whereas Venus, we only ever see it in the evening sky, the morning sky, so now's the opportunity to see it. Jupiter is much further away, and of course it is the biggest planet in the solar system. Right, it's like a solar system itself. I can't remember how many moons it's got now. It's
increasing all the time because they can find small ones.
About 70 moons, and
but also it's so large, isn't it? You could take every other planet in the solar system and its moons, and you still, if you squash them together, still wouldn't have the capacity of Jupiter.
No, and what we Kay mentioned earlier, remember we talked about the. The theory is going back into the earlier century, and that of gravity being the source of solar energy. Well, actually, that is what we find with Jupiter, right? It's actually liberating more energy than it receives from the sun, and this is from gravitational contraction. And that's what led, when scientists discovered this, it led them to the theory of how the sun was being.
That's why people sometimes call it a failed star.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
If it had more mass, wouldn't necessarily be all that much bigger, but if it had more mass, then it might have had enough to start nuclear reactions.
That's
but
right, yeah.
It's quite a lot short of that.
Yeah. So that's, we won't go too much into Jupiter because actually it's disappearing from my view, but in about 6 months from now, it's going to be in our evening sky and we'll have a close look at this giant planet.
I think it's interesting too. We've just had what they call a conjunction. Conjunction means things get close together. Okay, so Venus and Jupiter got a bit closer together. They can get really close.
Yeah.
This time it wasn't a super one.
Remember, when you say
super
close,
one.
That's only close as we see it in our sky.
Yeah, from our point of view, they appear to get close together. So what's really happening there? As I said, it's a bit like racing cars on a track, you know, and you're standing in the middle of the circle in the middle there, looking at these racing cars, and one appears to come up and pass the other.
Mm,
they're going at different speeds, that's why. Yeah, and that's the sort of effect. It's from our viewpoint. They're actually just doing their normal orbits. They're not changing anything.
Yeah.
It's just our viewpoint.
That's right, yeah. As we see it from planet Earth, yeah. Mm. Okay, so just briefly in our night sky at the moment, she just mentioned that I can just pull up our night sky that we can see in around about 6 o'clock in the evening once it's gone dark. With the Southern Cross at its highest point in the sky, there's the Southern Cross there, followed by the two pointer stars. But also of importance in the sky are two important constellations. Orion is our sign of summer, and that sign is setting. Not too long after the night skies, as you see, Orion will set. And while Orion is in our sky, we have the lazy, hazy days this summer. This Orion will be up where the Southern Cross is, for example, during the summer. Right, so that's Orion there. And at the other end, we have got the Scorpion, Scorpius. And the Scorpion is the sign of winter. And as the Scorpion rises up, it gets colder and colder. And throughout the winter months, the Scorpion is going to be the dominant constellation in the sky.
It's a beautiful area of the sky.
That's right, yes.
But it's also the fishhook of Maui, isn't it?
I was just going to mention that. This is also the great fishhook. And there, for those of you watching it on TV, you'll see I've just brought the fishhook up. There
I think it looks far more like a fishhook, you know, with something you can tie onto than it does. Well, I'm not really familiar with scorpions, so I reckon it's a better fishhook.
Yeah, I see.
I think it's much better. I'll go for the Maori one anytime.
Okay. Yeah, well, we will talk about the fishhook and what its meanings was a little later. Anyway, there's a picture of the scorpion over Stonehenge, Aotearoa. And just to briefly mention, remember, the winter solstice coming up on Sunday, June the 21st, and Matariki on July the 10th. So do get in touch with us. And with that, we're going to have to say farewell, and we will be heading off now. And see you soon. Bye. Mm-hmm.